Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not filmed in front of a live studio audience. Hello, and welcome back to Where Nobody Knows Your Name. I'm James.
And I'm John.
That's John. We're talking about a funny episode. And the reason I hesitated there... The reason I hesitated there and said it in such a strange way is that we get a bit of stand-up in the episode. And yeah,
depends what you call stand-up.
Someone was standing up.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Lots of long pauses in this episode, then, I take it.
Tumbleweed going on. Yeah. But this is my son, the father.
What's with that?
What's the deal with the... But it's used as a punchline for a certain joke, but there is a good joke I like. Well, I think it's a good joke. And on a similar vein, which is, oh, I see that your brother has become a priest. Do they call you father or brother? And it's like, they call me John. You know, that's a better joke. 16th of January, 1992 is when this episode airs. Season 10, episode 15 was directed by James Burrows and written by Dan Staley and Rob Long.
And I think this is, it's got sort of an iconic status mainly because of the sort of stand-up element of it. I mean, it's definitely a picture, like a screen grab I've seen quite a few times of Cliff towards the end of this episode. So I was excited going into this one.
Various memes it's been used in. Mm. Yeah. You know how Ken Levine said a while back he didn't like writing for Cliff?
Mm.
I think Dan and Rob didn't like writing for Cliff.
Well, he's famously the butt of a lot of jokes, and this kind of puts him into the limelight in this episode and says, what is his comedy chops as a character? Because he's always found himself to be the sort of, or considered himself to be the funny man in the whole bar. He always considered himself to be the most interesting person in the room. So it's definitely a natural position to see him or want to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh, yes, very much so. But the cold open.
Yeah, cold open's a weird one.
Phil!
I think this cold open is quite reminiscent of the kind of material they'd write for Al, which I do like about this episode and this cold open. But it is Phil hitting on Lilith, but also anyone in the bar, essentially.
Any woman. Any woman. So he's talking to Lilith. It starts off innocent enough. He's asking her about the weather, saying... It's cold, it's slushy. Then it escalates real fast, John.
Lilith just asks for the check. She says she wants to settle up a tab and leave. And you got to question Phil a little bit here.
In terms of what is that, his ambition?
No, well, I'm not gonna criticize him for hitting on people. But he is very aware that Lilith is Fraser's wife.
Yes.
So I feel I can at least be critical of that.
You know what their couple name would be?
Phyllis.
Yep. That's all. That's all I've got to contribute to that.
I'm wondering if you're going to try and purposely do bad jokes through this episode or whether it's just going to be a natural thing.
I didn't say that was a joke. Merely an observation.
Well, you laughed at it.
No, I laughed at how easily you knew the answer. It's the Rod Stewart question all over again.
I got that surprisingly easy last week.
Yeah.
But after Lilith settles up, he moves on pretty quick to the next woman who walks into the bar, essentially.
Yes.
With the same lines and all.
Cold outside, huh?
Yes.
And we got a slush thing going.
So it seems.
Fear not?
No, thank you.
You ever been with an older man?
Woody, I'm ready to settle up.
I'm not looking for commitment. Cold outside, huh?
One-trick pony is what you could call him.
Or just a persevering man.
The definition of insanity is...
Finish it.
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
There we go. If you only did the beginning bit, I wouldn't have been able to like talk for the rest of this episode, I don't think.
The definition of insanity, and then just staring wistfully into the distance.
What's up with that? I feel like we're going to make the what's up with that, like, I mean, it's famously not funny, but I feel like we've already said it more than three times in this episode, and it's going to run its course, I think.
It's a whole Seinfeld thing, but Seinfeld himself doesn't actually know where it came from, because he doesn't remember saying it.
So he's never said it?
It doesn't happen as much in the show Seinfeld as you think it would, given
it's sort of a Bear Steens Bears.
Yeah, the Mandela effect. Yeah.
Luke, I am your father, or no, I am your father.
Yes, exactly. And do you think you're lucky? Well, do you, punk? Same thing.
Do you not say that? I can hear our researchers at work.
The actual line is, do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? Is often misquoted and popularly used in a humorous and boastful manner as saying, do you feel lucky, punk? So yeah, they've condensed it. It's the common version here.
I tell you what, James, I think you've got at least 5 minutes in your stand-up routine with this sort of whole skit.
It's just a list of facts, isn't it?
I want by the end of this episode you to have a full 15 minutes of material fleshed out.
When I was in Edinburgh Fringe, often there's various comic acts around there which are just in the back room of a pub somewhere, right? And, you know, they're amateur comedians, they're there, you know, getting their first early gigs, you know. So you may not know them by name. They haven't been on TV or things. You may not know what they look like. So we went to one and we were like, yeah, this will be good. We're watching this while we're waiting for this other show that we were going to see. Guy didn't show up, John, for half an hour, 40 minutes into an hour long set. But his lighting guy did. And the lighting guy said 10 minutes in, waiting for this guy, but we thought it was a character piece. We thought he was, like the comedian was pretending to be his own lighting guy. And then, as I say, half an hour, 40 minutes in, this guy came sweating, coming through the door, and the lighting guy went, oh, thank God you've been here. I've been trying to keep the show going for the last half hour. And yeah, this lighting guy just started talking about the tattoos on his body. And he held the crowd, but I think everyone in the room didn't know why it was happening. You know, sometimes the abstract arts, you know, make us for fools, John.
Well, you know, you got credit where credit's due, you know. If he could hold the crowd, he weren't too bad then.
He held the crowd, but, you know, everyone was like, oh, this comic was really weird. Really deadpan. It was like an Andy Kaufman if he was a Scottish electrician.
That sounds good. They might have done that again another night.
Do you think he went back?
Yeah, probably, yeah. The guy went, I got away with that. I'll just show up late every night.
I'll just keep doing it, yeah. But then because the actual guy, you know, well-structured, had good jokes, the actual guy at the end, you know, and you give what you thought the show was worth. And I felt like going, I don't want to give you the money. That guy held the room for twice the time you did.
There you go. He could have made a little separate tip jar. I tell you what, James, we've already divulged from this episode. Should we kick off with the main part of the episode? Because we talk about your favourite subject. Lunchtime.
Lunchtime, baby.
Paul and Norm are discussing what they would like for lunch, and there's a vast amount of things that they want. For some reason, Woody's job includes sourcing them lunch. The options they kind of want is Chinese subs, cheesesteak, Mexican, but Woody has an offer on the table, which is Melville's offers him sort of the scraps of food. The leftovers, which isn't a bad deal. And today they've got crab salad on. Initially, Paul and Norm are sort of, they call him a bit of a sort of dumpster diver kind of idea.
You say it's not a bad deal, but leftover seafood depends how long it's been left over for.
I think it's still fresh of the day, though.
Crab salad does sound nice, though.
I'd have a crab salad from Melville's any day of the week. No matter how long it's been left out.
A lobster roll is a common Boston thing, isn't it? Lobster roll. I've had a lobster roll in Boston. I recommend if you like seafood.
There you go. Woody goes up to get his crab salads. Norm and Paul turn their nose at it, but when they see it, much like you with your lobster roll, they get a bit envious of Woody and they start wanting it. But before Woody goes up, Sam is sort of very... It's this idea of betrayal of Woody going up to Melville's for lunch, you know? Sam and John and Alan Hill are still very much at war.
Sam changes his mind a little, doesn't he?
Well, he kind of gives in the end. And he says, fine, go get your lunch upstairs. And then when he sees the crab salad, he does think that does look pretty good.
It's because, as was addressed last week, Woody doesn't earn much.
Yeah, this is sort of brought up. This seems to be a running theme of the sort of season a little bit.
Well, it's got a wedding ring to pay for. But because he doesn't earn much, he would take free lunch where he can get it.
Hey, wouldn't we all?
Fair.
I'd get a free lunch. There's a lovely exchange between Fraser and Sam about this topic as well, which is Fraser asks, how much does Sam actually pay Woody? And Sam's response, I think, is excellent.
Just how much do you pay that boy?
I pay him a fair amount. See, Fraser, I don't think you understand that a bartender's hourly wage is just a very small portion of his overall income. Most of it comes from tips.
I see. I won't bring it up again, sir.
I think that'd be best.
But yeah, a lovely criticism of how we never really see any of the sort of regular patrons of the bar ever tip anyone.
It's quite an alien concept to us here in the UK, isn't it? Tipping at bars.
Yeah, at a bar, yeah.
And just drink and leave.
Tipping for a meal is different.
Tipping for a meal happens, but unless you're at a very fancy restaurant with very expensive drinks, tipping in the UK for at a bar isn't common.
No. Yeah, definitely not. Especially not now that you ping with a card.
Different worlds, John. Different worlds.
Oh, well.
Carla enters with Gino.
With good news.
Yes, he's going to be a priest. Mom, going to be a priest.
We've not seen Gino for a while, have we? Not since Honor Thy Mother, right?
Correct, yeah. He's a strange kid. He could be anything he wants to be. Benito Mussolini, a priest. I didn't mean to go Bugsy Malone, but there you go. There you go.
I think it was worth it. That was a good call, James. Referencing a little bit of Bugsy Malone. Carla's thrilled by the idea that her son will be a priest because, and she says it herself, it's a get out of hell free card. She kind of thinks she's untouchable in the eyes of God if her son is a priest, which is a great idea. It plays into Carla's sort of whole being. Like, it's a very natural assumption for her to think that. But through this episode, we see that she uses it almost as a license to be mean.
Yeah, Carla goes up to 11 this episode, doesn't she? Mostly towards Rebecca.
Yeah, she's unchained. She feels like she's untouchable in the eyes of God. She is out to just cause mayhem. And it's kind of, it's not necessarily targeted solely at Rebecca, but she seems to get the most brunt, really.
Shame. Rebecca does tell Gino she's happy for him and that he's becoming a priest. He quickly shows his sleazy side.
Yeah, he makes a pass at her, which makes us kind of feel like maybe this wanting to be a priest is going to be short-lived.
I did watch an episode of The Sopranos recently. It's an early episode of The Sopranos where their neighborhood priest, very minor spoilers, you know, tells Carmela Soprano that, you know, he does find her attractive. And she goes, Father, I didn't think you looked. And he goes, I can admire. It doesn't mean I act, you know. It's the same as a beautiful sunset or a flower. I can look at these things, you know. And if we were to give Gino the benefit of the doubt, maybe that's all he's doing. Just looking.
There you go. You can give him the benefit of the doubt. I see through it.
Carla then cuts Paul's suspenders.
Yeah, immediately she's on the rampage path. I guess there's three stories in this episode. That sets up probably, it feels like the C plot, but it's also the name of the episode, which feels weird.
There's, well, it's Sam and John Allen Hill, Cliff and Carla. There's a lot going on. What to say next? Cliff is now a published humorist?
Yeah, Cliff comes into the bar very excited that his funny words have been published, which the rest of the bar seem fairly excited about. And Norm asks to hear what's been published.
Daffynition is what he calls them.
Yeah, which I hadn't heard before, but is apparently a thing. It's a definition that sort of undercuts something for humour. Or repurposes something in a punny context.
I'd heard examples of them before. I didn't know, one, that they were called daffynitions, and two, I didn't know Cliff invented them. You know? In real life, I've heard examples of them.
It's a form of pun involving the reinterpretation of an existing word on the basis that it sounds like another word or a group of words. There's a Wikipedia page for it.
There you go. What's your favourite definition?
I'll be honest, I've not had a huge experience with them, but I guess I'll go for Cliff's one, which is postal increase, what happens to your feet after you finish your route. I can steal the one from the show.
Mm-hmm.
What's yours, James?
Yeah, I like coffee, someone who is coughed upon.
Okay, that's good.
The definition of whiskey is a bit like a whisk. I like that. Antelope, to run off with your mother's sister.
Are you getting these from... So this is quite popular in a BBC Radio 4 show called Sorry I Haven't Got a Clue, which I've seen recorded, I think, twice now. So I've seen a round on this, and the aunt one, Antelope, I think I've heard that one live.
I heard one which was twerk. It was one, a form of seductive dancing. Two, where Yorkshiremen go to earn money. Where are you going? Twerk.
Well, there you go, James. You are rivaling Cliff Clavin at his comedy game there. But Lilith is surprisingly joyous at Cliff's funny words. I don't know why I said that so strange, but she is surprisingly finds him really funny, which I'm struggling to even comprehend it. That's why the words are coming out as gibberish.
Definition, postal increase. What happens to your feet after you finish your route?
Now, Lilith, you thought that was funny?
Oh, yes.
You should see her at a Marx Brothers movie.
Isn't Zeppo hysterical?
Oh.
The way he just stands there without expression or reaction. Boy, that cracks me up.
This episode kind of explores Lilith's sort of slightly askewed sense of humor and how it doesn't really align with, I suppose, popular humor.
Woody does bring down the crab salad, as you say. They all take a gander. And Sam, well, they all tuck in, don't they?
Sam takes a bite, yeah. And he gets a rude awakening, I was going to say, from his bite, because it has a piece of shell in. Cracks his tooth.
He does. Yeah, on presumably a bit of crab. Have you ever chipped your tooth on anything?
I have, actually. I'll give you... I don't think you'll actually... I think you'll be able to guess what I chipped it on. I didn't actually chip it, I cracked it.
A fork?
How did Yeah, I chipped it on a fork. I feel like I might have told you this before then. Yeah, I didn't realize the fork was in the food quite so deep and bit it and got a crack through it and had to get that filled. Not nice, really, but it was all right. Not too bad. Could have been worse.
It's like when I overzealously ate an omelet and bit my tongue.
Yeah, that doesn't sound nice. Have you chipped your teeth before, James?
I chipped one of my teeth. It's only a slight chip on a beer bottle cap because I thought that I could pop it open, but I was a fool.
I saw someone do that and it freaked me out.
Yeah, there wasn't much injury, not much pain, just did that and I felt something and went, well, obviously that's not working. Well, I got my old trusty bottle opener.
Yeah, you've always got one, haven't you?
Yep.
Not much help to Sam, though, because he has already chipped his tooth and it sounds pretty painful just by his lisp alone.
By his lisp and the fact that he takes a swig of sparkling water, because he's a fool, John.
But it's a swig of sparkling water in celebration because he's decided he's going to sue John Allen Hill and it'll be his way to get back at him.
I don't believe that. There's a shell in this salad. I'm going to sue him for everything he's worth.
Oh, great. Just when I get a little ahead in my checking account.
Not you, Woody Hill. Oh, you know something? I am going to sue him. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I'm going to win, too. Right. Here's to me.
Hopefully it'll be fine. Rebecca is collecting receipts for income tax time.
Yeah, and she's been doing this all night, she says, because they're not labelled well. And this is where we get to see sort of Carla's menace strike again, because she sort of pretends to be quite endearing and says, no, that must have taken ages. It must have been quite cold. Maybe you need warming up.
Blows them all away with a hairdryer.
Why is there a hairdryer behind the bar?
Sam.
Oh, yeah, maybe. That would have kept me up all night otherwise.
This is when Cliff starts working on his stand-up, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's sort of, I think peacocking might be the word, actually. He's sort of strutting around thinking he's the best stand-up going, and Lilith is enjoying it. I do like his joke about psychiatrists.
Definition, psychiatrist. guy who shrinks your head and your bank account.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Bullseye.
I like that one. That was a good definition, but the rest of it is sort of middling. And he starts talking about what if he has a comedy night at Cheers? And he brings it to Rebecca, and Rebecca perfectly handles it.
She suggests going to an open mic night that very night.
You don't want to do it here. You're a professional stand-up. You want to do it at the proper comedy club. You don't want to waste it here. And then he sort of buys into that and then goes, I'm going to go there tonight. She just turns to, I think, Fraser and Norm and says, see, I'm not as dumb as you think, kind of thing.
And you think I'm so dumb.
So she expertly deals with Cliff there.
Some of Cliff's jokes, let's talk about them. He simply asks why women go to stylists, not barbers. It's no joke. It's just a question. And then he does an impression of Richard Nixon. And Lilith finds both hilarious. We don't know why. Don't know why. Norm and Paul leave to meet Vera, which is a fun little gag. I've heard so much good things about her.
Yeah, anything to avoid Cliff's stand-up at this point. Meanwhile, we find out that Sam has said to John Allen Hill, I'm going to sue you. And John Allen Hill has said, I never sold you a crab salad. I gave one to Woody for free. You cannot sue me for that. And sort of Sam takes it into his own hands and starts sort of, what's the term? Boycotting Malville's and stomping the pavement. That's what I was looking for.
Yes, he's got a big sign and everything.
Sandwich board.
A sandwich board with a crudely drawn crab.
And I think on the board it says, I chipped my tooth at Malville's, ask me how. He's going in hard here. And it sort of comes to head when John Allen Hill comes downstairs to the bar and says to Sam, Sam, we need to settle this. I will give you $500. Sam says, I will take that. We've got a deal. And then they sort of celebrate this. And then John Allen Hill grabs a handful of peanuts, puts them in his mouth, says there was a stone in it, and he's chipped his tooth. Shows Sam the stone. Sam holds it and looks at it, goes, you put this in there yourself. And meanwhile, John Allen Hill takes a snap. Says a picture says 1,000 words. You got him.
You've been gone got, Sam.
Yeah, Sam's been played there.
Mutually assured destruction. Speaking of destruction, Carla's on the warpath again. And she's told Rebecca that there's been a terrible fire at her apartment.
Yeah, and Rebecca is sort of not believing Carla at this point. She knows Carla's been messing with her for a few days now and just doesn't believe anything she says. And Carla sort of really digs deep to try and make it sound convincing and real. And Rebecca ends up sort of running in a panic. And as she's running out the door, she hears Woody crying and saying, ah, my flat's burnt down. And she realizes she's been got.
You've been gone got, kids. Yes. Carla has no regret, really. And then Gino comes in a shiny new brown suit, which Carla thinks is too flashy.
Yeah, he's decided he's not going to be a priest. He's going to be a model instead, which is sort of an earth-shattering moment for Carla. Quite literally, the heavens sort of thunder, and she becomes very worried very quickly.
Hey, Ma, check it out.
Gino, what are you wearing? Isn't that a little flashy for a priest?
Oh, no, a priest. That was this morning. I'm going to be a male model. I figured, why waste these looks on the church?
Uh-oh.
And then she just starts whimpering in front of the bar and apologizing to God and fears his mortal punishment. Doesn't she?
Yes, there's sort of an impending doom that's going to come, essentially. But what we do get after this scene is Cliff's stand-up routine, which is nothing short of slightly terrible.
Slightly? Only slightly?
I was going to say nothing short of terrible and then sort of held back a punch a little bit.
Final performance this evening. Let's put our hands together for the merry mailman, Cliff Clavin. Come on, come over again.
Hey. Hiya. Now, Boston audiences are the greatest audiences in the world. You know, I got this friend whose son is going to become a priest. I know where this is going. My son, the father. What's up with that?
Never thought I'd see a whole room full of people not laughing at Cliff.
Well, let's see what topics we got in the old mailbag, huh? Okay, here's one. Anybody have a chance to call a TV repairman lately? What's up with that? Here's a doozy. Avon lady. Ding dong. What's up with that?
Well, that's it for me.
Seriously, folks, on a serious note, I just want to say, drinking and driving. What's up with that? Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I really enjoyed it. And I got to say, this is the most love I've ever felt in one room in my life. Thank you.
He's been referred to as the Merry Mailman, which I think is a good moniker. But people immediately leave after his first line, which isn't a good sign.
No, he starts out with sort of a packed out small little club and people drop like flies, really. Merry Mailman is quite good. He does appear to be like a sort of character act. I don't know what the stand-up's called. There's a stand-up in the UK who literally walks on stage with a shopping bag.
But a lot of people do character acts for their stand-up, don't they? Philomena Kunk is one of them in the UK. Lee Nelson, another.
There's a lot of characters all in comedy. I think some of them are great. The Mailman did not pay off on stage, I'd say. But I suppose you've talked about some of your experience with comedy, James. What's your earliest experience in comedy, whether watching or otherwise?
Only Fools and Horses was a very early one.
Okay.
Yeah. As well as, you know, your cartoons. Cartoons are comedy, aren't they? They're exaggeration for purposes of comedy. Scooby-Doo, probably. One of the Scooby-Doos. You know, probably the original Scooby-Doo was a very early example for me. Yeah.
I think one for me is, do you know, like, talent shows at school?
Yes.
So I remember vividly there was a kid at school and he did a stand-up routine. And I was like... this was primary school, so I would have been, what, like 10? It would have been maybe younger. I was like, this guy's a visionary. He's so funny. So funny. He did a routine about Daddy Longlegs being the most venomous. And it wasn't until about 3 years later I realized he'd just done a Ricky Gervais skit.
Had he?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know the Ricky Gervais Daddy Longlegs.
Yeah, he just did that. I do have another one, James, which is in these same sort of talent shows. I mentioned The Family Puppet last week. He made his way into the school talent shows, luckily not with me, but with my brother, doing a sort of ventriloquist stand-up act. I'm going to ping you two pictures of the puppet, because you haven't seen it before. So I want to get your live sort of reaction to this puppet. So this is the family puppet.
That reminds me of... Well, that's being posted on social media for your listeners out there. It's
I found these pictures on eBay. We've got one of them. That's the family puppet, and he's absolutely terrifying.
I mean, we could put that on Instagram and go, guess which nationality John is, and they'd get it in one, wouldn't they?
I'm going to say that's you. I'm going to say this whole podcast has been me and you. Do you see what I mean about the eyes? The eyes just work by gravity. You're moving back and forth.
Anyway, Cliff bombs.
Yeah, Cliff's standard does not go down well.
Bombs, you could say.
As Norm does say, yeah.
He says there was a bomb scare where just about where you were standing. Yeah. It's not the worst stand-up routine I've seen.
What's the worst?
Michael Richards at the Laugh Factory.
Cliff's wasn't as bad as that. I'll give him that. He wasn't that bad.
No.
We return back to the bar and we see... Carla's still sort of atoning, looking for penance or punishment to level out what she's been doing when she thought she was sort of bulletproof from God. And she can't find a way that she can sort of atone for all of this chaos she's been putting on people. And meanwhile, Cliff is sort of wailing his sorrows into a pint, talking about, you know, how he's failed his first gig as a stand-up comedian and he doesn't know what to do. And these two sort of things conjoin the stories together, which I suppose why this title works, because it sort of is both of these stories together.
So, yeah, Carla's been on her knees with her tray, you know, almost crawling around the bar because she thinks that's penance, but she thinks she needs to do more. She can't think of what. And that is until Cliff says he needs someone to whom he can repeat his routine until he really nails it down. And Carla feels that's enough. That's enough for her to endure, to be forgiven in the eyes of God.
Not enough punishment for anyone, I reckon. But James, we've missed out a key part of our episode, which is the cast.
Maybe we were just saving it until the end. Who's to say? John was right. We did miss it out. King Curtis as John Alan Hill. Josh Lozoff as Gino Tortelli. Paul Wilson as Paul Crapence. Philip Pullman as Phil. Neil Lerner as MC at the Comedy Club. He also appeared in 30-something, Gabriel's Fires, Seinfeld, The New WKRP in Cincinnati, The Golden Girls, Batman Returns, Married with Children, The Wayans Brothers, News Radio, Carolyn in the City, Animobile, Law and Order, Blue Bloods, Orange is the New Black, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, American Fiction, and many more.
What a cast and what an episode. It's the Merry Mailman, James.
It's the Merry Mailman, indeed, John. What have you got for us, old? He's got a little definition for us. You want to hear it?
Yeah, of course.
Shingle. What do you think that means?
I don't know.
I'll tell you what it means. It's Sean Connery's definition of a bachelor, is what that is. Thank you, Cliff. We'll take the rest of the mail. Thank you. But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more.
James, have you got any comedic questions or are your trivia all serious?
I've got one related to comedy, yeah.
I went all serious. You can kick off if you want.
What venue does Cliff do his stand-up in? What is the name of the venue?
Oh, I do not know.
It's the Laughterine in Kenmore Square.
The Laughterine. I've got a serious question, James. What time is lunch in this episode?
10:36, 10:37?
10:36, you're right first time round.
Between 10:30 and 10:40. Yep.
I should have known you'd get that right, yeah. James, I have a classic question for you. What earrings is Carla wearing this episode?
They're yellow, I think.
Maybe there were two pairs of earrings, because the pair I saw definitely weren't yellow.
I know in the previous episode they were kind of green, ghoulish hands. But you didn't ask me in the last episode, did you?
Well, you can't ask every time. You'd catch me out otherwise if I asked every time. I'll lull you into sort of a secure state before I ask.
Is it a red exclamation mark?
It's chili peppers, which feels very close to that.
Oh, that was pretty good. Yeah.
I would say the chili pepper is the sort of red exclamation mark of the natural world.
I agree.
That's a definition. Chili peppers, the red exclamation mark of the natural world. What's up with that? Chili pepper, when the salt locks the door and the pepper's out.
I was going to say chili pepper, when Iron Man's wife is a bit cold.
That's good as well. And if you think you've got the comedy chops of us and would like to do your own podcast, you should use Zencaster.
Yes, it's a very good tool that we use to record our podcast. We've been using it for a few years now and fully recommend it for all your aspiring podcasters out there. And you can use Norm to get 30% off your first month of any Zencaster paid plan. And we'd certainly like to listen to your podcast and all the adventures and interests you have.
Zencaster, when you want a professional podcast, that's a definition.
Last call. What do you think we'll have to drink, John?
Is there a Merry Mailman cocktail?
Last laugh, maybe.
It does sound good. I tell you what, though, James. I'm going to order a second drink just in case. The bomb. Because we can't be too sure when we do stand-up, you know? So we'll have the last laugh, but we might also have the bomb. Dealer's choice.
With that, thank you for listening, everyone. This has been a very busy episode. Tension the most chaotic we've seen Cliff for a while, since his vegetable days. Yeah,
he should have had some kind of vegetable in that postal bag, I reckon.
What, like carrot top?
Yeah, he should have done some ventriloquism. That would have really sold it, I think.
It's you and your puppeteering.
Well, anyway, this has been Where Nobody Knows Your Name. What's up with that, James?
Thank you for listening, everyone.
What's up with that?
Anyway, what's up with that? What's the deal with the Cheers podcasts? That's the question I'm going to give you for the end of the episode. But until next week, thank you for listening, everyone.